verse Srila Prabhupada quotes quite often. It invites in or out, huh? In or out. It encapsulates the central difficulties of materialistic householder life. Prahlad Maharaj said, "Yan maitunari grihamedi sukham hitucham, kandu yanina karayor iva dukkha dukkham, tripyanti neha kripana bahu dukkha bhaja, kandu divan manasi jam, visheheta dhira." Srila Prabhupada translates, sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedhis, so-called grihastas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Purport. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses, especially the genitals. This is generally found everywhere, and specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. Actually, however, this has not made anyone happy. Even the hippies who have given up all the materialistic comforts of their fathers and grandfathers cannot give up the sensational happiness of sex life. Such persons are described here as kripanas, misers. The human form of life is a great asset, for in this life one can fulfill the goal of existence. Unfortunately, however, because of a lack of education and culture, people are victimized by the false happiness of sex life. Prahlad Maharaj therefore advises one not to be misled by this civilization of sense gratification, and especially not by sex life. Rather, one should be sober, avoid sense gratification, and be Krishna conscious. The lusty person who is compared to a foolish miser never gets happiness by sense gratification. The influence of material nature is very difficult to surpass, but as stated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, "Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam itam tarantite." If one voluntarily submits to the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be saved very easily. In reference to the low-grade happiness of sex life, Jamunacharya says in this connection, "Yadavari mamachet Krishna padaravinde navanava rasa dhamanujyata rantuma seet tadavari patanari sangame smaryamani bhavati mukavikara shushtu nisthivanamcha." Since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in Him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. Jamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways, but since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit with disgust. So, yan maitunadi grihamedi sukha. Grihamedi sukha means the happiness of materialistic householder life. Maitunadi. Maitunadi means beginning from sex pleasure. Pumso striyo maituni bhavamita. And maitunadi, from sex pleasure, direct sex pleasure, all the other so-called pleasures of materialistic family life expand. Home and children and so many things. Or even Prabhupada said these skyscraper buildings and big cities, they're all manifestations of sex life. Materialistic householders are increasingly absorbing themselves in the mode of passion and impelled by that passionate mode of which sex life is the central point. They're building things and constructing things and expanding their empires, all for the same central point. So, Maitun Adi, Grihamedi Sukham, Hituchcham. Tuchcham means insignificant. All this big deal is being made about what Prabhupada calls the sensational happiness of sex life. And Prahlad Maharaj says that it's nothing. Even clinically speaking, a few minutes of sex pleasure and sexual intercourse. This is also a manifestation of sex. Seventh canto, chapter 9, text 45. So, tuchcham, it's insignificant. I mean, it's there in every species of life. The mosquitoes also have sex life. And it's a big thing for them, you know. But what is it? How important or significant do we think a mosquito's sex life is? But for the mosquito, it's crucial. The ultimate high point of his existence. So, Maitunadi Grihamedi Sukhami Tuchcham Kanduyanena Karayor Ibadukkadukka. Kanduyanena Karayor, the example given is that it's like scratching an itch. Someone has an itching sensation, he scratches it. And the result of scratching is that it itches more, and the result of itching more is he scratches more, and itches and scratches and itches and scratches. That's sex life. Kanduyanena karayori vidukka dukkha. That's the comparison. Simply scratching an itch, and the itch doesn't go away, it gets worse. And ivadukka dukkham, the consequence of that sex life is unhappiness. Unhappiness. First of all, because it's tuchcham, it's insignificant, so everyone is disappointed. There's a Latin proverb which I really ought to get down in the Latin, but the English is, all animals are sad after sex. All animals are sad after sex. It's so much endeavor, and you know, male elephants are fighting over the sheep, over the female elephant, and this whole huge thing is going on. And then they get it, and afterwards, such a disappointment. Tuchcham, insignificant. And bahudukka bhaja, so much trouble. So many difficulties come. Either because it's illicit sex, and then there's pregnancy, or abortion, or there has to be contraception, or there's attachment, and then there's hatred also in the relationship. So many troubles to keep the wife happy, to keep the girlfriend happy, to keep the wife from knowing, to so many different things. Or in married life also, there's so many troubles we've been discussing. Bahudukka bhaja. Many different kinds of trouble, suffering. Bahudukka bhaja. Tripyanti neha, they're not satisfied. That's the first problem. Like, the itching is, I've scratched and I'm still itching. I'm drinking and still I'm thirsty. I went through all this trouble for sex and still my sexual desires are not fulfilled. Tripyanti neha, not satisfied. Even if one becomes a big prince with so many wives and concubines and everything, still he won't be satisfied. After so much, I mean, Chipyantineya Kripana, and my valuable human life I'm wasting, and like a miser. Bahudukka Bhaja. Kandutivan Manasi Jam. Manasi Jam means the whole thing is just a mental concoction. The whole idea that this is going to make me happy, that this is enjoyment, the whole idea of love, the whole idea that my husband is handsome and that my wife is beautiful, the whole idea that he loves me, or she loves me, the whole paradise is a mental concoction. There's an interesting short story by Tolstoy called Family Happiness, the theme of which is basically that there isn't any. And it talks about this woman who gets married, and when her husband proposes to her, they're in this garden, and the jasmine are blooming, and the nightingales are singing, and it's just, there's a kind of intoxication there. We're going to be so happy. And then they get married and everything's dull. Everything's dull. A lot of writers who have good things to say about that. We won't get into literature class today. But it's disappointing. Manasi jam, because it's a mental concoction. It's a mental concoction. And sooner or later, the veneer wears off and one sees what's really there. One sees what's really there. Jonathan Swift has some good things to say about that also, some other class. One sees what's really there. And what's really there is not attractive, not enjoyable. Still one is trying to enjoy, and one is pushing the mind to get some concocted enjoyment. One is not enjoying. Manasi jam. Or just like people are going to clubs, Prabhupada said sometimes naked, sometimes half naked, you know, sometimes bottomless, sometimes topless, sometimes with high-heeled shoes, and sometimes this way, that way. Just by some kind of mental concoction to try to put some enjoyment there, make some fantastic image of enjoyment. And it's just mental concoction. Manasi jam. Vishaheta dhira. Therefore one should become sober and tolerate. Vishaheta dhira. Sober person means, rather than going through all of this trouble to scratch that itch, to agitate the mind and then try to satisfy that agitated mind, better to be sober and tolerate. All right, some itching is there. It wasn't there before. Later on, it won't be there. Tams tatiksha subhart. It comes, it goes. Let me tolerate. That's brahmacharya training. Let me tolerate. Now some desire is very powerful. Some mental concoction has become taking over the mind. Let me not be agitated by that. It's a mental concoction. Just as one is not a sober person, doesn't go chasing after mirages or running away from illusory tigers. So a sober person doesn't become agitated by sex life and try to satisfy these desires one after another, tolerates. So either in the brahmacharya ashram or also in the grihastha ashram, one has to tolerate that. If one expands the mental concoctions in the householder life, one becomes a grihamedhi. Then he becomes like the materialistic person, trying to satisfy so many desires, and becoming disappointed, and in the process losing one's Krishna consciousness. So one has to learn this art of toleration. Either in the brahmacharya ashram or in the Grihastha Ashram. Therefore, brahmachari training is there. The brahmachari learns how to tolerate so that he becomes a self-controlled Grihastha. And as a self-controlled Grihastha, he tolerates so many desires that may arise. Or, as Srila Prabhupada points out here, engages himself in the service of Krishna in such a way that these desires practically evaporate. They're products of the illusory energy. So the more one engages in the service of Krishna, the more these things come under control, or they're swept away by the superior force of the spiritual energy, spiritual pleasure. So much so that Jumunacharya says, when I think about sex life, I just want to spit. Because that's Krishna consciousness. By superior taste of devotional service. So, here the danger is that one can be captivated by these false allurements and try to be happy and wind up dissatisfied and beset by so many troubles, so many troubles. Therefore, Krishna consciousness means to become dhira, sober and self-controlled. Some questions thus far?
I believe also that getting married is having problems, and alone we have problems, but explaining that with more, it solves more problems. And if we are already in the problem, what will you advise? It will be the duty for what is our duty, or what shall we? How we can we do better our work being in the problem?
Serve Krishna. We're already in problems, every one of us, because we have this material body and we're living in this material world. So there's nobody who's not in problematic existence. So Prabhupada called it a bad bargain. And making the best use of the bad bargain is to dedicate ourselves to serving Krishna. That's the only way to solve our problems, is to be engaged in devotional service. Otherwise it's problems. Prabhupada said that this sex life is like the Delhi Laddu, the famous celebrated laddus of Delhi. And if you haven't had one, or if you don't have one, then you want one. So you're in anxiety. Can I get that Delhi Laddu? Where can I get that Laddu? And those who've gotten it, they're also suffering because it's so rich and it just does you in. So those who don't have it are lamenting, and those who have it are lamenting. So those who are aspiring for sex enjoyment, they're suffering. And those who are getting sex enjoyment, they're also suffering. And those who are trying to control their senses, still there's some desires there, so they're suffering. But that suffering is minimized because they're becoming dhira. All right, let me tolerate. Yes?
About this distaste of the Vimalacharya. So, I've heard a quote by Prabhupada saying that while the material body is there, then that attraction is there.
Mm-hmm.
By mentioning the material body. So is it such that a sober person, he feels the attraction but he simply doesn't act on it, or he actually loses the attraction completely?
He loses the attraction, and if somehow some attraction is there, some leftover sexual thought or impulse, he thinks that it's so nasty. In Bhagavad Gita, apuryamanam achalam pratishtam samudrama pravishanti yadvat tadvat kama yam pravishanti sarve sashantim apnoti na kama kami. The ocean is still, even though so many rivers are running into it. It maintains its level. Similarly, a person who's dhira, who's sober, tadvat kama yam pravishanti sarve, he's also feeling sometimes some desires. I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that, this is so nice, this is so nice. and may come to him, but he controls that. He knows that this has come, some desire has come because I've got this body. So some thought has come, some desire has come, but it's nonsense. So he's not disturbed. Sa shantim apnoti, therefore he's peaceful. One becomes peaceful by tolerance. Just like a person, so today's Ekadashi. So suppose someone has decided to fast. Not that you have to, but suppose you've decided, today I won't eat anything. So because you've decided, even if during the day some thought comes to you, I wonder what they're having for lunch today, or you're walking in the hallway, you see, oh, they've made such and such nice preparation. But you've already decided, so you're not going to agitate your mind about it. All right, today I'm not eating. The mind is peaceful. Otherwise, if you haven't decided, you're going this way and that way, should I, shouldn't I, this, that. But once you know that today is my day for not eating, so food doesn't matter. Food doesn't matter. Because you've decided. So then you're peaceful. Yes, let me chant Hare Krishna. That's the idea. Let me sit down, I'll chant Hare Krishna, use my time. So a Krishna conscious person, some desires are coming, I want this, I want that. But he knows this is nonsense. I want illicit sex, I want to smoke, I want to gamble. But he tolerates that. These desires are nonsense. I promised my spiritual master not to do these things, to stay out of trouble. He becomes peaceful. Nakama kami, not the person who goes chasing after his desires. Marsh?
Just a little bit of the other side, but I wasn't here for the first two classes, so it's already covered. But in Bhagavad Gita it says, Vichachara Savuchite, that one is called a
cheater,
pretender, if his mind is still dwelling on the sense objects, but he's renounced it. And of course, the first six chapters of Karma Yoga, you can't attain perfection by renunciation alone. And also the third chapter, what can repression accomplish? Better to regulate the senses. So is there a danger in the type of preaching that you're presenting that someone, you know, he'll say, let me tolerate, but actually he needs to regulate, he needs to enter the Grihastha ashram?
Therefore, the guidance of the spiritual master is required. What to do, what not to do. Someone will make more progress in the Grihastha ashram because he's not peacefully able to execute his duties in Brahmacharya ashram. So he's recommended by the spiritual master, you get married. And then if he thinks, no, I should stay Brahmacharya. No, but the spiritual master is prescribed for some students Brahmacharya, for some students Grihastha ashram. So one has to take the prescription that's meant for him. Not just say, this medicine is better. Every medicine is good for the particular patient. The whole purpose is to reduce sex life and increase Krishna consciousness. So someone reduces sex life effectively through the Brahmacharya ashram, someone reduces it effectively through the Grihastha ashram. Well, the guru has to see which will be more suitable.
My previous question was more related to the actual contemplation stage. That is it that, you know, so a person, beautiful woman, doesn't look beautiful? Or is it that the beauty is there, but he's not attractive? He's still Christian. Yeah.
Lord Chaitanya said that even when I see the wooden form of a woman, my mind is agitated. And by nature's arrangement, the form of woman is so made as to agitate the mind of men. It's just, that's the way it is. Beautiful or not beautiful, doesn't matter. But their agitation is there. So a Krishna conscious person being situated on the spiritual platform, he's not attracted. He's busy. Just like you're eating a big Sunday feast and somebody comes with some leftover dog biscuits, you know, you're not going to get all agitated about that because you have some better thing. So the more one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, the more this sex pleasure just seems ridiculous or nasty. The actual advancement, Prabhupada said, I can walk into a room of beautiful women and not be attracted. That's the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. One is so much absorbed in the beauty of Krishna that the so-called beauty of this material body appears nasty. After all, what is it? Some skin and bones and blood and guts and all put together with to appear like something nice. And it does appear like something nice by nature's arrangement for a brief time. And then it's not nice to anybody. Then it's not nice to anybody. There was recently some horrible picture of Brigitte Bardot published in her old age. Some news magazine published. And nobody is going to get agitated because now she's finished. Old lady. So, briefly, by nature's arrangement, Prabhupada quoted something that by nature's arrangement, in her youth, every woman looks beautiful. It's nature's arrangement. And that lasts for some time and then it's over. But the Krishna conscious person knows that. It's beautiful today, but it's not going to be beautiful tomorrow. So how is it beautiful? Krishna is beautiful today, he's beautiful tomorrow, he's beautiful 100,000 years from now, he's beautiful always. That's beautiful. And beautiful today, ghastly tomorrow. That's not beauty, that's illusion. You know, today this person has such beautiful hair and such a sweet voice and she's so affectionate. And tomorrow she's got curlers in her hair and she's mean and nasty and I want this, you didn't give me that, you promised me this. So he thinks that why am I after this kind of beauty, which is beautiful for 5 minutes and horrible for 5 years? Or 50 years, you know, whatever you buy into. He says that's not beauty. Beauty means permanently beautiful. Not temporarily. That's the illusion, just like a bubble. Bubble is something. But it's over, it's finished, it's just like that. It has no permanent meaning. The fruit in the water appears to be nice, but you can't get it and hold on to it, so it's useless. It's just apparent. So, a person who doesn't know anything or is an animal sees the fruit in the water and thinks, wow, grapes and cherries and oranges and pomegranates. But a person who knows that it looks good, but it's not there. If I go after it, I'm just going to get wet or drown or get frustrated or whatever it is. So just leave it sit there. So Krishna conscious person may recognize that yes, this is a beautiful woman, but what does that mean? It means beautiful for a few moments and finished. Even anything in this material world. One devotee, in the very early days, he was at the roof of 26 Second Avenue or someplace like that, and he said, oh, Swamiji, come and see the beautiful sunset. And Prabhupada said, as long as you are attracted to the beauty of this material world, you'll never be able to go back to Godhead. So that's one of the dangers, that one becomes infatuated and he thinks, my wife is so beautiful, my girlfriend is so beautiful. One becomes enraptured. Maitunadi. Hridya Granthamahu. Mitor Tayar Mitor Hridya Granthamahu. By sex combination, the attachment becomes very strong and whoever they are, one thinks, they're so handsome, they're so beautiful. And then one forgets about spiritual realization, and then one's human life is finished. That's the danger. Some other point? Yes, Maji.
Why shouldn't the meditation be that this is the spirit soul more than that? It's kind of difficult when you have a beautiful woman before you. So, okay, it's just okay. It's only going to be a lover. You know? It's,
well, both things. The real vision is that that's what this, what a human being is or a living entity is in this material world, the combination of matter and spirit. So a swan distinguishes between milk and water. So a self-realized person distinguishes. He knows, here's two things, the spirit soul and the body. And the spirit soul constitutionally is very nice, servant of Krishna. Consciousness, that's eternal. And the body is not very nice. So therefore the self-realized person values the spirit soul, or he values everything. He knows everything is Krishna's energy. This body also is meant for the service of Krishna. But it's meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna conscious person, Prabhupada said, he sees a nice woman, he thinks, here's a, this person can be engaged in the service of Krishna. And a materialist thinks, this person could be engaged in my service. Everything has value, even the body has value when it's engaged in the service of Krishna. Not that we're, yeah, we have to see that. We're taking care of the body, we're interested in seeing that the body is nicely seen to, keeping body and soul together as Prabhupada said, for serving Krishna. So a devotee will see that way. This lady could be engaged in the service of Krishna. Or my wife. The materialistic Grihamedi sees, here's a wife who can cook for me, who can satisfy my senses, who can conception, get the understanding that actually our business, both of us, is to be engaged in the service of this deity, Krishna. So their attention becomes diverted from the material platform to this spiritual engagement. Then householder life becomes nice. Yes?
What will happen if one acts sinfully?
Just excuse me while I'm thinking of it. But not that on the grounds that everyone's spirit soul, we just make friends with everyone. You know? The tiger is spirit soul, let me embrace the tiger. You know? Yet everyone's spirit soul. But we don't, we have different kinds of relationships with different spirit souls. Because of the defect of the materialistic civilization, especially Western civilization, they, you know, they have friendship. Men and women are just like friends and they mix together freely. In a cultured civilization, Vedic culture, that mixing is not there. They know their spirit soul, but they know that this combination of these spirit souls and these two kinds of bodies kills spiritual realization. Doesn't mean women are hated, but it means that we know what's what. Matravat Paradareshu. Every woman is respected as being like the mother. Yes?
Maharaj, what does that mean actually when a mother is considered as a mother? Is she like a, is she allowed to give advice? Like a mother?
Well, she may also be, if the mother gives advice that's taken as a affectionate gesture, the mother may also say something, and that's taken, the mother's saying something. But after all, the mother is maybe a little sentimental. Women are considered less discriminating. So it's respected, the mother is saying something, but not that that advice is always taken. First thing is that mother is not meant for my enjoyment. There's no question in any civilized society of enjoying one's own mother. That's for the pigs. So that's the first thing. Mother is respected. She's not meant for my enjoyment. That's the most abominable, degraded thing. So, matravat paradareshu, She's somebody else's wife, so she's to be respected. Mothers are respected, given respect. Krishna and Balaram, how they're respecting Devaki and Yashoda, especially Krishna and Balaram, they went to see Devaki, Vasudev, they're offering such respect, offering obeisances. So the women are respected. In some place it said, Yatra Naryastu Pujante Ramanti Tatra Devata. Where the women are worshipped, there are the demigods enjoy. Well, this is Vedic civilization.
Worship?
Yeah, worship Pujante. Yeah, it said. It doesn't mean that we put the ladies on the altar and do art, offer arti. But it means they're treated with such respect. Not exploited. Respected.
Maybe you could speak on this point of exploitation, because it seems to me that there's a conception that when a man gives a lot of attention to a woman, listens to her, and nods his head, and in this way he's expressing very friendly emotions towards her, that this is considered, he's a nice man.
Yeah.
But actually, from our point of view, that's exploitation.
That's exploitation. Exploitation, the basic focal point of sex, of exploitation, is sex enjoyment. The final pinnacle of exploitation is sexual intercourse. That's exploitation. Let me enjoy this woman. And that's the materialistic civilization. Somehow or other, by some arrangement, by candy, by liquor, by this, by that, to win over a woman and make her an object of enjoyment. That's the business. And then this way, that way, or some other way, so many things are expanded from that. But that's the point, that this woman is meant for satisfying my senses. And sense satisfaction culminates in sex life. So when you cut out that point, that sexual contact, then your exploitation is practically, there's not very much to be said about it. You know, how much exploitation will there be? It becomes very much, you know, I mean, from one point of view, we're very heavy on women in ISKCON. We make them stand in the back during the arti or the kirtan. You know, horrors of life in ISKCON. You know, I had to stand in back. That same woman in the material world, in the same, you know, course of a year, would be used by 50 men. But that's not exploitation, that's just love. That's called Maya. And one is being exploited, and he's thinking, he loves me. The whole materialistic civilization is set up for that kind of cheating. Women are simple. So they're set free, and when they're free, they can be victimized. Otherwise, in Vedic civilization, her father is there, her husband is there, her grown son is there. No access. But materialistic civilization, free access. And the woman is so bewildered, she's thinking, this is very nice. I have free choice, I have so much opportunity for enjoyment, so many people are attracted to me. But nobody wants to accept any responsibility. When you're pregnant, they send you to the hospital for an abortion clinic. Or when you're little old, you know, you've been married for 10 or 15 years or 5 years or something. Now you're not as beautiful as you were when you were sweet 16. So we go and find some new cookie and throw you away. Because your business was to satisfy my senses and now you're not as interesting, so we'll find something else. That's exploitation. And Krishna consciousness means to engage man and woman in the service of Krishna. Where's the exploitation? Which isn't to say that there's no such thing as mistreatment. There may be. Or discourtesy. A Krishna conscious person is a perfectly cultured person. So he knows how to be cultured, how to be courteous, how to be decent in dealings with others. You know, not that because we've got this Shastric quote here from Jamunacharya, so when we pass one another in the hallways, you know, the saliva is building up to a river, you know, because it's spitting every time we see one of our guys. Not like that. And culture. So we have to learn how to be cultured. As far as I can see on any side of this discussion, there's not really a disagreement about philosophy. Everybody is there in the books, very clear who's who and what's what. But one has to be cultured. The practical application of the philosophy in ordinary dealings is culture. How to treat people. So that we have to learn. Yes, Maharaj?
Maharaj, as a person with experience in Krishna consciousness, I don't feel respect, but I feel ignored. What would you say about that?
Well, of course, the business of the brahmacharyas is to ignore you. The woman is there, the business of the brahmacharyas is to have no business. So from that point of view, there may be ignoring. Dealing with the women is the business of very specific people, generally the husband. So he has to give a certain amount of attention to the wife to see that she's cared for nicely and engaged in the service of Krishna nicely and happy and so on. So that's his duty. Otherwise, it's not the brahmacharya's duties. Women are, you know, in some sort of mental distress or not, you know, this or that or the other thing. That's not their problem. It's somebody else's problem. And not that if we see a woman, you know, stabbed and bleeding on the stairway, we're going to pass by because, you know, we're brahmacharya's. But in general, men have no business with women. Actually, there's some big feminist, I think it was Germaine Greer, a very big, we won't say anything about her, anyway, she's a feminist, who went to India, I'm told. And her idea was, you know, typical, stereotypical idea that in India all the women are oppressed and downtrodden, and, you know, they just sell them and burn them and so on. And then she went to India and she found out that the women had an independent society. That in the West it's always relative to men. The women always have to orient themselves towards what's going to catch a man or engage a man or get a man to like them or be friendly with them or do something for them. And it's always this relative thing going on which messes up everybody's mind and everybody's life. And she went to India and saw that the women are not like that, always relative to the man. They have their own society. And practically speaking, all day long, the women are with the other women. You know, in America, all the men and women are together in an office and, you know, the coffee break politics are going on and, you know, this one's passing by and doing, you know, grabbing this or grabbing that. You know, so many things are going on. And in the Vedic civilization, the men are out working someplace, and the women are doing their business together. That's very nice. They have their own society. Don't always have to be thinking about men, 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 men. Very nice. And they're brought together at different times when it's appropriate. So that's Vedic culture. And previously, the house was divided into two sections. There was an outside section and an inside section. The outside section, the men stayed, and he did his business and received guests, you know, business associates or whatever. And in the inner quarters, the women were there. They were separate.
Still widespread in our society.
Pardon?
Still widespread in our village in Israel.
In Israel, still widespread.
In the Arab,
in the Arab country, I mean, any civilized culture. Any civilized culture, you'll find this. ancient Arab the Arab culture or in the Middle Eastern countries, even countries we think of being savage. They're more advanced than the so-called civilized Western first world countries on this point. And women are women, men are men, they're doing their business. And they're more peaceful. I went into some office of a big magazine in New York. They have like 30 typewriters, little desks, and men are sitting at some of them and the women are sitting at others of them. And it's like a pressure cooker. You know, the men are got their ties on, they got their coats on, they got their, you know, their cologne on, and they're powerful and they're doing things, and the women are dressed fit to kill. And you know, their minds are like, if you could draw a graph of it, you know, nobody can be peaceful in that place. So peaceful mind means separation of men and women as far as possible. Prabhupada said one time, many times actually, he said, my philosophy is that man is good and woman is good. But man and woman together are not good. That is my philosophy. Many times he said, man is good and woman is good. Man and woman together are not good. He told me in Los Angeles, they have this balcony where the ladies would be for the kirtan, the class, and so on. Prabhupada asked one time, where is Jadurani? I do not see her I have not seen Jadurani. I said, well, she's up in the balcony, she comes early, and she comes late, she's doing her paintings, she comes last minute, and then leaves first thing, goes back to her. Prabhupada said, Sadhu Rani. Then he said, this balcony system is very nice. He said, and if possible, separate entrances also. Men, one entrance, woman, another entrance. As far as possible, separate. There's another question, comment? Yes?
Maharaj, as you explained, it's about charity trained to ignore women, because it also has to be polite.
Hold on 1 second, let's let this jet do its thing. What is that?
Being polite.
No.
If you are separate, okay, then you don't meet each other in the hall, for example. But is it allowed that if you meet, that you say, for example, good morning, or that if you have to pass through a narrow hallway, that you have to polite?
Well, courtesy, it certainly includes being polite. But politeness in Western culture and politeness in Vedic culture are different. In politeness, a man in Western culture, a young man and young woman pass each other in the hall, and he says, good morning. And she says, good morning. And who knows what's going on? His mind is going, her mind is going. And that's polite. If you don't say good morning and do a little smile and go through a few more, little more body language like that, then it's, you're a creep. In Vedic culture, it's different. A man and woman are passing, and they make way for one another. And that's politeness. Generally, the women are trained to be very shy. So a man is coming by, the woman stands to the side and becomes a little inconspicuous. And the man passes by. And that way, she maintains her chastity. There's no interaction, there's no somebody's going after somebody or, you know, making time with somebody. And the women, therefore she becomes very respectable. It doesn't mean that she's a pariah and that she's, you know, shrinking into the shadows and insignificance. It just means that she's so high class that you can't mix with her. You know, just like a really high class woman, you can't really get close to her because she's high class. Low class woman, anyone can mix with. But a high class woman is, you know, a little unapproachable. Even in Western society, if a woman is really high class, you can't just walk up to her and say, excuse me, lady, da-da-da-da-da. You know, if she's aristocratic, she's a little distant from, you know, ordinary men. So in the Vedic culture, of course, then she goes out at night and she's drinking and partying and everything else. But at least in ordinary, you know, on the street, it's like that. But in the Vedic culture, there's so much, they're so respectable. Prabhupada said, my mother would not go next door to accept an invitation, except if she was she'd go in a palanquin carried by four men and covered. Nobody could see. Nobody could see. Surya Napashati, even the sun. Even the sun couldn't see her. That's class, high class. Still to this day. You go in Vrindavan and some men are passing by and the ladies are covering their faces because they're shy. So there are different signs of culture. You know, the material now in Western society, a woman's considered cultured if she knows, if she knows finance and she's aggressive as a hawk. But in Vedic culture, a woman is high class if she's very shy. Then it's a sign of good breeding, a sign of culture, a sign of respectability. And such a woman, no respectable man will approach. Prabhupada gave the example that he and some men were standing by a doorway and some sweeper lady was there. A sweeper woman means low class woman, sweeping where everybody else is walking. But she had to get through that doorway, so she was standing there, apart. And three or four friends, you know, aristocratic, Prabhupada came from an aristocratic family, high class family. So three or four gentlemen are standing there, and this woman is standing there to the side, and they could understand that she has to go through, therefore they all had to move. They all had to move. By her behavior, they had to move. That's Vedic culture. Shyness. Yes.
In this inside circle where the ladies had their ashram, you could see, did they also have deities, their own deities and some own kind of worship?
Well, I don't know so much about it, but I think this was going on, this was like everybody was there for the deity worship. You go like King of Jaipur, everybody can go for his deity worship. So many people come. Or the family would be there and they'd come to get for that, everybody can come. Then that's the deity's program. Everyone can come. Actually, he runs the house. Man has her part, woman has her part, and the deity has the whole thing.
I've seen it in Sri Rangam, and they have a street around the temple where the temple Brahmins live in a very traditional way with their families.
Right.
And they have in their house one room, which is a deity room. And there everyone
can come there.
And the men and the women of the family, they serve the deity together. Yeah. That time they can come together and mix for cooking, for worship.
That makes everything transcendental. When the deity is the focus of attention, everything becomes transcendental. Yes?
All those, that's what you were describing right now, isn't that materialistic in a way? Because we're always considering the body. Like, we're preaching movement, like, as you were saying, like, women are sometimes, you know, like, they're glorified now and they're in the business and they're becoming like a hawk. But like a few days ago, we glorified Canada for because she had really no business. Things so like.
So this is the modern age. Everything is a little different. You know, everything is adjusted or considered a little differently. But still, this is the culture. We should, if we're adjusting, we should know what we're adjusting. You know, this is the original thing. It doesn't mean the woman was incompetent. The description is there of Draupadi. She was running the whole palace of Maharaj Yudhisthira. She had so many thousands of maidservants, so much money, so many things going on, cooking here and this there, and reception of, you know, so many high class, you know, royal guests and so many things. She had the whole thing down. You know, all the servants by name and how much each of them were getting and where the money was going, how much for this, the keys to the whole place, everything. You know, Maharaj Yudhisthira wasn't going to run the house. He was running the kingdom. So she ran the house, but what was the house? Quite a scene. So it doesn't mean that women had to be incompetent, but they had their traditional role. Yes, Marsh?
Yeah, I mean, why should a devotee be, anybody's devotee be glorified because they have a $1 million business, men or women?
Yeah.
And if that's the standard of glorification, then maybe it's a perversion of the culture. Hmm.
The real appreciation is...
If he's devotional, I mean, we can glorify, what does it matter if someone has a $1 million business or he just hands out charanamrita?
You're right.
So, the fact that, if that was a fact, they had a conference and someone was glorified because they had a $1 million business, then they knew something wrong.
Missing the point. That's not our appreciation. Now, such and such devotee is making $1 million a year. That's Protestantism. You know, you're making money, so you must be getting God's grace. You must be a good devotee. But if someone's appreciated, it's because they have some realization of Krishna. That's the real thing, right?
Maybe someone has done their business very nicely for Krishna, then they can be glorified.
Yeah.
But not simply because they have...
Doing business. Prabhupada gave the example, one woman every day was bringing water from the Jamuna for the deity. She'd pass by Krishna Balaram temple, one of those little lanes. Every day she'd be doing that. Cold weather, hot weather, whatever. Because that woman is going back to Godhead. And just for doing that service. So, nice.
And can you train the woman's shyness, like, you know, for about training programs or those things?
Don't ask me, Baba.
So you said training.
I'm just saying what it's supposed to be. Don't ask me how to do it. Real thing is they should be trained from childhood. That's the real thing. Real culture means how you're trained as a child. So this problem is there. The women are not properly trained. The men are not properly trained. Therefore, all uncultured. Therefore, we have so many, if there are any difficulties in our movement, so many difficulties come from this point, that we're uncultured. We may know the philosophy, read the books, you know what the basic idea is, but we're not cultured. Men don't know how to act, women don't know how to act. Men don't know how to act with other men, women don't know how to act with other women, men and women don't know how to act with one another. Superiors don't know how to act toward inferiors, inferiors toward superiors. This is what culture is all about. Like if a young boy is very respectful to his superiors, he's cultured. He's cultured. And still in Indian culture you'll find even a young man won't speak in, you know, put forward his opinion in the presence of his elder brother. The elder brother is there, he's superior, the younger brother holds his tongue. He's cultured. And you know, the way things are now, you know, your mother, your father tells you something, get lost. So cultured. Even in the Arab world, the same thing you were pointing out. I forget which king it was, but in the Saudi dynasty, the recent kings, One brother was super competent. He was running the whole kingdom. But the other brother was older. He was the titular king. And in his presence, that younger brother, although he was running everything, he wouldn't say a word. Right? I forget which king it was, King Saud, this one, that one. But in the presence of the older brother, he wouldn't say anything. And then if you talk to the guy in his office or something, he was sharp as a razor. But when he, you know, wheel and deal. But in the presence of his elder brother, very silent. So how to be cultured, one has to learn. That will solve so many difficulties. If the women are very shy and proper, not, you know, on the hunt and, you know, always wanting to have friendly talks, and very shy and reserved and always engaged in the service of Krishna, and the men are self-controlled and, you know, minding their own business, and they know how to be polite, but not friendly polite, not unfriendly polite. But polite means our men and women pass one another in the hallways, and it's not that, you know, they're spitting, one spitting this way and the other spitting that way. But they have no business with one another, then they just pass, you know. Make a lot of space and go by. That's politeness from in our culture. The Karmis have a different politeness. It doesn't mean that, you know, I hate your guts, you hate my guts. But we have no, you're not my wife, and you're somebody else's wife. No business. We keep our life pure that way. Women will stay very pure, men will stay very pure. Everybody engaged in the service of Krishna. And it's nice. We have run out of time. Hare Krishna. All glories to you.